Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.
Hang in there, it is.
That's Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
Well, the first week of the 2024 PGA Tour season officially in the books. We've got a lot to cover there in terms of what happened on the course. And, of course, today we have some long anticipated breaking news off the course. Tiger Woods officially ending his partnership with Nike. We're going to cover all that in today's show. But let's just begin with a warm welcome to you, Smiley, who are still enjoying the Hawaiian Islands over Kapalua. Got a chance to play the plantation course yesterday, and then, you know, at some point heading over to the Sony Open to cover that this following week. So how was week one in Hawaii? Good vibes and enjoying your time over there?
Yeah, man, great vibes. My legs, my feet are all tired from walking up and down the hills at Kapalua, so I'm very excited to get to Honolulu for the flattest week of the year at the Sony. So it's just kind of wild being in the same state and have a place that could be a golf course that's so hilly, and then you go to another part that is just couldn't be more flat, the golf course that we play. So two completely different vibes, but still, I think you have to make a bunch of birdies over there too this week because it is absolutely pouring rain. So that place is going to play very soft this week.
Well, it's a good place to start. Obviously, we're going to get to Chris Kirk's win, kind of detail some of the names in the field that are worth covering, given the weeks that they had. But the course was sort of a hot button issue of sorts, both online and as part of the broadcast this week. You tweeted early on in the week, just calling this the most unique course on the PGA Tour. Obviously not a difficult course, and I think that was the point of contention for many, but, you know, having to hit so many different shots, due to uneven lies, elevation changes, the creativity required there, you compared it to an Augusta National type of maybe not necessarily challenge, but just in terms of the topography and the shots you're hitting there. So that's maybe the good. The you can decide whether or not it's bad was just how easy the course played, as you noted. So the final round scoring average of 66.66, which is a little more than six under par, is the lowest single round average on the PGA Tour since at least 1983. Easily beat the old mark of 5 3/4 shots under par at the 2003 Bob Hope Indian Wells Country Club. Some other things of note in relation to the course and the way it was played. Sung J.M., who finished T5 in this tournament, finished the week with 34 birdies, which is a new record in a 72-hole PGA Tour event. He made 11 birdies when he shot a 10 under final round 63. And of course, friend of the pod, Max Homa, had the longest recorded drive in the ShotLink era since 2003 with a 477-yard drive on the par 4 seventh hole. So before we get to your thoughts on this course and you know, is it worth having a fun, very scoreable course on tour every year, or is that something we want to get away from and make everything challenging? I think it's also worth kind of setting the table for the plantation course specifically, because it was last year the easiest on tour in relation to par. It's the only par 73 course on tour. But, you know, a lot of people say, hey, look, you know, the one of those par fives, the fifth hole, that was the easiest hole on tour last year. And you could just convert that into a par four, and maybe that would make it a little more difficult and make it a par 72. Well, if you did that, Kapalua would still be easier than every other course on tour, except for PGA West Nicklaus course. So you know, I don't know if you have other ideas or ways to make this a stiffer test for these guys, or if you even want to do that, because this week is meant to be easing into the season, seeing the best play an easy course relatively well and go low. Where do you shake out on you know, all the things you enjoy about this course versus all the critique it gets for the way it's played?
Yeah, I think, you know, yesterday, Kiz and I and Kurt Byram went out and played the golf course, kind of like you said a minute ago. And, you know, our job as announcers is to kind of relay what the challenges are that the players face and on every shot. And we kind of like to set up, you know, what are they fearful of? Well, you know, what are they looking out for? But after playing it again, because I played it back in 16 during the tournament, but, you know, even being out there all week, you still, like, you know, it's easy, but until you really play it and see your golf ball on it, it gives you that perspective of like, holy crap, okay, it's just not hard at all. The only thing I thought was hard out there was chipping like into the grain stuff, like really nasty. Like we were trying to chip short of 14 and we were all just laying the sod on it. But other than that, like everything was so easy. And yeah, like that tweet bringing up Augusta National, like I did say, like, you know, the golf course is like the challenge is not there compared to Augusta National by any mm-hmm. means, but there are similar types of shots you have to hit. Now they are easier because it's first off, the trouble's not there. You have to be so precise on where you leave the golf ball. Kapalua, you do an extent. There's just plenty of room. The misses, you know, you really don't ever get in too much trouble unless you just have some very outlier misses, I would call them, because most misses end up in okay places. And you know, the golf course, yeah, you could make the par 5 fifth hole, which I think is one of the easiest holes on the PGA Tour, a par 4. I mean, it's still, you'd be hitting driver 6 iron into a pretty big green. You're not necessarily making birdie if it was a par 4. It would be a lot of pars, but, you know, there's not a whole lot you can do to the golf course because you just really have to have a 2 to 3 club wind to make it challenging, because there's just too many drivers and wedges. It's just too short. The downhill holes, although they can play up to 575 yards on some of them, you know, I hit like 3 wood 9 iron into 17 yesterday, and it's like 580 or something like that. So, and some years, you know, in years past here, you know, if they've got a bunch of rain and the place is playing softer, you know, you're hitting, like, if you add a bunch of wind and a softer golf course, it's a much more difficult track, because you're hitting at times 4 to 5 clubs more into greens. It can be that drastic out here because of how much roll you get on some of these holes. So you throw in a softer golf course and wind, and you have a little bit different challenge on your hands. This week we had light and variable winds. It was firm. I was talking to Sahith Theegala walking down the 17th yesterday, and he looked at me. He's like, "Dude, the ball will not stop rolling." Like, his drive on 18 went 460 yards is what I had it at. And the hole before, it's like this little cutty driver trying to keep it short of 399 through the fairway. And this thing would have kept, I mean, if there wasn't rough at the end of the fairway, his ball's in the hazard all day. I mean, it just was a rocket ship in the fairway. So, yeah, I imagine that while you're watching the tournament, I assume that there's probably annoyance seeing the leaderboards of how many people were in this golf tournament, but you know what? I think it's a fun event. It used to be more fun when there was only 30 guys. I thought the 59 guys here this week was different. I hated the threesomes vibe. I would like it to be back, go back to, you know, what is this?
Tournament winners.
It just kind of lost its identity a little bit. But I will say, in this day and age of the PGA Tour, I don't think it's a bad thing that we have 59 guys there, because just from a depth piece, I think, you know, we used to have the best players in the world here, and it was, you know, the 30 dudes here were all superstars for the most part, outside of 10 dudes. Now you got 59 guys here where, you know, it's not all superstars here, but there's a lot of really, really high quality players in the middle and the back half of the field which I don't know if that helps you from an official world golf ranking standpoint. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be a similar field. We're going to see 8 times this year. So hope you like the guys that we're playing.
Well, a couple things there that I think are worth just emphasizing. One is, you were not the only person making the Augusta National comp. That's not a crazy one. I know people see the scores and say, like, this in Augusta, no way. I mean, this is something that Jeff Shackelford said in his Quadrilateral newsletter that dropped today. And by the way, this is a place where he and others have used as a predictor of success at Augusta National in the past. I mean, who won Kapalua last year? John Rahm. Who won the Masters last year? John Rahm. It's not crazy to look at this and say, maybe, Chris Kirk and others who played well here, Jordan Spieth, Sahith Theegala,
good here,
could play well at Augusta as well because of the type of, creativity that it requires. So I think that one, definitely makes a lot of sense, even if Augusta is, of course, a tougher test. I'm curious, you mentioned this a little bit, you going out and playing it and the difficulty of this course lying and maybe some of those grainy chips. And I've kind of heard it said that Kapalua used to be a much tougher course when they had early iterations of Bermuda on the greens that were much, much grainier and difficult to read. And in its current day form, as it stands, it is very difficult to read. That was something that you and Kiz and others alluded to on the broadcast of guys who show up for the first time. I saw this a couple times with Ludwig Gobert on the broadcast this week where he hits a putt and he's looking at it like, it does that? How? Certain putts that break up the mountain or towards the ocean and, cups that are cut kind of on the edge of two different, grain going in different directions, which makes it kind of tricky to read putts or know where it's going to end up. And I wonder just that if you think part of the reason why this course has become much easier to play are advances in agronomy, where there is, strains of Bermuda or other grasses that are much less grainy and much easier to kind of read and much more predictable. And if, is there a world in which it's worth a golf course staying with an old world grass or a less advanced grass to keep the challenge of that course up for tour pros or others?
Yeah, nothing to really say there because I went out there and I couldn't miss a putt, Charlie. Could not miss a putt. So
must be nice, Mike.
Yeah, I think these tour players got a real problem with their games because I didn't have an issue. I made everything I looked at. Now the chipping on the other hand, I was kind of struggling a little bit around the greens, chipping, especially out of the tight stuff and into the grain. I was actually trying the strategy of moving forward while I chipped just to try to get the low point way forward like Victor does. And that came with a little bit of success, but boy, was I diggy. Oh, my goodness. So I honestly think the only way to play those shots when it's that grainy is a pitching wedge or 9-iron, something like that. Because in a tournament, I just would be, ooh, my legs would be dancing.
Well, the man who did not have much difficulty with hardly anything this week, the winner of this tournament, Chris Kirk, he is... Let's set off our sirens, our air horns. The first recipient of the OWGR multi-win bonus, as it were. The big changes the OWGR made in the offseason are already having an impact. And tacking on to his win at what was formerly the Honda Classic, what was briefly the Classic in the Palm Beaches, what is now the Cognizant Classic last year, he got a little 4-point bonus on top of the 60 and change he got for winning this event and jumped 27 spots in the official world golf rankings from 52nd, 25th. He's, of course, now...
He jumped how much?
27 spots.
That seems like kind of high, right?
It does. It does seem very high to me. I'm no like OWGR scholar or someone who like understands how all this stuff works. In fact, I went to kind of to see that and was stunned by that. And then also was looking in the notes and seeing his little 4-point bonus. Like, there we go. We're going to see that a fair amount this next year of like that calendar year bonus for winning multiple times.
Do you like that?
I think like almost everything in the golf world in today's day and age, like I would just want to see how it plays out before I make a solid decision either way. Like I think winning is hard to do, no matter what tournament you're playing in. So maybe this is one way for guys who are, if we're looking at, the signature events and how much more points they're getting versus, you know, whatever you want to call regular PGA Tour events or opposite field events. And so in a FedEx Cup, since those guys aren't getting as much weight there for their wins, if other ways to play yourself into those events or other majors are through the OWGR, a guy who's winning a bunch in those sort of events, if he's getting little bumps here and there for those wins, maybe that's one way to kind of, you know, help out the, whatever you want to call it, the mule, the non-signature event player, you know, whatever, whatever. So I don't know. I kind of want to see it play out more before I issue a verdict on it either way. Kirk finished 31st in the FedEx Cup last year. He's in all the signature events. And not a guy that I would necessarily classify as a mule, because I think that's maybe both a disservice to his game and also like his current tour status. He's in all these events. It's not really in a category where he's struggling for marquee starts. But as we kind of have this discussion and the way this year is going to play out and everything like that, is this a guy that if you are in that, you know, mule category, do you look at his journey over this past year and be like, hey, that's a roadmap for me. That's how I kind of play my way into these, you know, these bigger events and greater success on tour, you know, effectively play better. And that's how I get there.
Yeah, absolutely. Play better. And man, I'm just sitting here looking at this official world golf ranking, and it's just, man, for a niche sport, which was what I keep reading on Twitter, which I'm like, what? I mean, this is my livelihood, man. Like, this is no niche sport. This is the sport. So, but Charlie, when I look at this, man, it's just like, how do we take this seriously? This world golf rankings list. It's just not even, oh God, it's just not a, well, it's not
what
a
what about it? What about it strikes you as being odd in your opinion?
Just, I mean, dude, I mean, if Liv Golf wasn't here, obviously I wouldn't have an issue with it. It's just, it's hard to properly rank with the Liv Golf Tour guys not being there. Cause you know, there's top 50 in the world players over there that are, you know, I just see other guys in the top 50 that I'm just like, what? In what world is this guy better or ranked higher than a Dustin Johnson, you know, or the list kind of goes on. It's with guys, Bryson DeChambeau. It's just, you can't even compare. I mean, it's just not a list I can take seriously anymore.
I think that's fair. I mean, I think all of these things, unfortunately, are discussions that are attached to other discussions. It's like, we can sit here and, you know, talk about a move that a guy's made on a week-to-week basis that gets him in more events, you know, whether it's PGA Tour events, you know, that are, you know, you're getting top 30, you know, this is, I mean, again, Chris Kirk already in all these events via his FedEx Cup finish last year, but if he wasn't, this would have gotten him inside that top 30 cut line, which is like the method of entry that Justin Thomas will use to play in these signature events going forward. So you can have these discussions and say, this is how it is, while also looking at that list and saying, this just isn't a real thing or shouldn't be a real thing.
It's just not, dude. It's more of the, you know, top 50 was the number that judged everything in the game of golf. If you're top 50 in the world, you're in everything. And now it's just, I'm not crapping on the dudes that are around 50. It's just a different name there than what we've been accustomed to seeing for however many so years. And even if you go from 50 to 100, you're just like, man, where are these guys that I grew up watching that were never outside the top 100 in the world? And I'm sure I'll probably offend people when I say all this, because they're like, they knew the risk they were doing when they went to Live. But I'm by no means a Live apologist when it comes to this stuff. And I know there's other different ranking systems that properly do it, but they're not being adapted. I know there's that Tugger. I think it's TUGR. Like, that's one that they're able to base it off head to head matchups and this and that. I don't know how it works. They came on Gravy and the Sleaze on SiriusXM, and Colt and I talked to the guy. It was interesting. I was like, man, well, I'm open to anything to properly rank the best players in the world. Whatever that system is, I'm in for. I'm not saying the top guys don't have, like, I mean, it's hard to argue anything in the top 15 is or 20 is that far off. It's more everything from 25 to 100. That to me is like where it's okay. We've kind of got a little lost here because I don't watch Live Golf. I don't have time to with with covering my golf as well. I see the results, check in to see how my cliques are doing. And other than that, you know, it's just
I'm surprised the cliques are still around. I mean, shoot, at this rate, like John Rahm might end up as a clique.
What a moment for him. What an absolute moment that would be for a franchise that I have just dear to my heart, you know. To get Rahm to come to that franchise would be a
do the cliques still exist? Am I putting myself out there?
Do the cliques exist? Yes.
Yeah, okay, yeah, they do. That's the timer squad. Exist. That's timer squad. That's right. What's a squad that went away? It's just Martin Keimer and Richard Bland right now. So I mean, there is a John Rahm sized hole on that roster, and I'd be really happy for you if you're able to land the free agency whale there. I mean, to be fair, Martin Keimer technically should have been booted from LIV for his performance last year and got to retain his status through his captaincy. I think if we're going to be fair and equitable here, and by the way, if we're going to make a case for world ranking points, Martin, we're stripping you of your captaincy. Rahm is now wearing the armband for the cliques. You can stay on the roster and play another year, but that's a fair way. Let's make LIV an equitable. Listen, I think if I see that, I'm saying LIV, maybe a little world ranking points coming your way.
Yeah,
way to go.
No, I'm all in. Like if the cliques are able to get Rahm in their roster, wow, what a momentous win for a franchise that needs it. You know, I think I said to all my Dallas friends, I was like, who's going to win a championship first? Is it going to be the Dallas Cowboys or is it going to be the cliques? And that's kind of been my bit to those boys cliques for a while, and could be the Cowboys this year, but I don't know about that. We'll have to wait and see.
I think Rahm would look really good in the classic pea green and gold the cliques wear. I think on the world ranking, like if I'm, because these days I'm trying to, despite my New Year's resolution to be a pain in everybody's ass, I'm trying to, you know, be as optimistic as I can for things that are happening in golf spaces, because I want all this to end well, because I want to have a better fan experience and have other people come to the game and enjoy the game. So if I'm trying to be an optimist about these world golf rankings changes that we just talked about, you know, in the context of Chris Kirk and others, it's that maybe that's setting the table for ranking LIV at some point, because if you were to rank LIV, the thing you'd want to control for is to not give, and I'm sorry that he's catching a stray here. I'm actually really impressed with what he did last year to earn as much as he did, as bad as he played. But like, we're not giving world ranking points to Siwon Kim in the world for finishing between 45th and 48th every week on LIV. That's unreasonable. It's a 48 player field. So the changes that the OWGR made and saying in any limited field, no cut event for this next year, the bottom 15% under no circumstance gets points. That's one thing that you feel like maybe opens up the door for ranking LIV. And the second thing I do think is that maybe they really weight the points you would give to a LIV style field. So it's like, if you win here, good on you. You beat a lot of good players and here's your bonus. But as it trails down, you're going to get, you know, not as many points as you would in maybe a comparable tour field that's a limited field or whatever. You know, maybe that's one way to do it, where it's like, if you win a bunch on LIV, good on you. You're going to get those ranking points. You're going to stay high. If you don't, you're still going to need to play well in majors and you may slide regardless. So I don't know if any of that feels like that's a fair way to do it, but maybe that's what the OWGR is signaling through those most recent set of changes.
Yeah, no, that makes sense to me. Like, I think the top players getting world ranking points from that tour makes a lot more sense than the middle and the back half, because that's where a lot of the PGA Tour players have issue is the guys that are handpicked that didn't really necessarily earn their way onto we call it elite tour. It's an elite money tour. So to be able to make this much money to be playing for this amount, where these players that once stayed on the PGA Tour probably should be making that much money when we're looking between the two on between the LIV Golf Tour and the PGA Tour. And man, I don't know. It's just it's just a interesting time right now, because what happens when the LIV Golf Tour, if they have John Rahm as their captain player and says, you know what, we are going to change the format. Like, this is what I came here for. Yeah. We're going to change this format. And whether it's 72 holes, which is going to be like the indicator for the world golf ranking, or let's say it's going to be not just the 72 holes, but what's the other one? I'm trying to think. What's the other indicator? Like the one that they're missing, like for world golf rankings.
Well, I think they want to make it an open shop. And I think that they would say, well, we just did this Live Golf Promotions thing and we had three players able to join our tour.
Yeah.
It's like promotion relegation, I think, are the big ones that they're touting as making it more of an open shop. Now, again, I don't know if booting, you know, a couple guys at the end of the deal and then, you know, bringing in three guys really is an indication of making an open shop on a week to week basis. Like, I mean, shoot, I think we've talked about this on this show. And I have no idea why. Maybe it's just the infrastructure involved. It would make sense. But if you had a Monday qualifier every week for LIV, it would be so exciting. I mean, I've tuned in every day of that promotions deal.
What team wants to get the Monday qualifier go? I would, as a captain that had a guy that was a random dude every week, I would be so annoyed by that.
Okay, well, so this is the best idea that I've heard. And I feel so bad because this was someone else's idea, and I've
taken all the Monday qualifiers like are on a team.
Yes,
okay, that's Monday, epic.
Monday Q team, four guys, and if you win that week, or I'd say it this way: if you finish top three in the team money, it's like finishing top 10 as for a guy that Monday Q'd
in. You stay on the Monday team.
The Monday team stays together. You play next week. And if you win the thing, your team's in for the rest of the year. Like you're amazing. All four guys.
I am all in that. But the team name has to be right. If it's a bad team name, then I'm out on it. You know what I mean? Like if it's right. if they win, but they don't have an epic team name, I'm out on the whole thing. But if they have the best team name and let's say they top five, I think you still I think that's another opportunity to give them a chance. Like, hey, it's like trivia night, you know, at the local pizza shop. It's like, hey, you won best you name won. Of the week. We're going to get you an exemption in the next week because your name was X, which was hilarious.
Well, and this is where I'm going to feel even worse because this is also this person's idea that I can't remember. But they were saying you call the teams Scrubs GC until they win. And then it's like they get to have a big branding party. It's like, hey, we're coming up with our team name for the rest of the
Scrubs
season.
GC. Yes.
What would be more electric than watching, you know, guy, and they're obviously going to be good players, but it's like these guys could go from nothing, no status anywhere, to winning millions of dollars. And it would, I mean, who wouldn't root for Scrubs GC every week? It would be electric. God. It would be so entertaining. It
could be what Liv needs just to get people to care, right?
And great PR, by the way. All the people talking about a closed shop, it's for the elite. So here, like, we're going to let you guys in. We're going to let in the little guy. To me, it's a win in a lot of different places. But anyway, that's my unsolicited advice for
the point I was trying to get to in this before we got off track. And that was my fault because I was trying to remember the format it on and all is if they do make the changes with Jon Rahm. And that's kind of one of the things that he was hoping would happen to where they would become eligible to receive official world golf ranking points. Where does that leave the PGA Tour? Are they more susceptible now to more players making the jump? Because now there's more money, there is points. So at what point do you look at for a guy that's on the fence and say, you know what, what's keeping me here? And we don't know what's going to happen. I think there's still a lot to figure out, as we talked about in our last episode. But still, I mean, you have to wonder, until that first Live Golf Tour event is played this year, you know, if it's going to be the exact same format, then I don't think you have to worry about a whole lot. But if they start making some changes to the whole concept of the tour, then I think you're going to have to really question where the PGA Tour strength right now. Because right now with the PGA Tour, you would say the one thing they have going for them right now is Live Golf Tour is not getting world ranking points. That is the biggest thing I think they have going for them as a piece against the guys making the jump. It's like, hey, you go over here, you're taking a big risk about ever playing in another major championship again, unless you already are exempt into some of those fields.
Agree 100%. And here we are. I just told you several minutes ago I was going to try to be optimistic about this, but I think if I'm putting my realist or even pessimist hat on, it's looking at, the various levers that there are to pull, right? And so to your point there, if Liv gets world ranking points, that's a big one that opens up the door for tour guys to go over there, get a bunch of money, and still get into the main things they want to play in those majors. And so I think that piece coupled with, we don't know what this private equity stuff is going to look like yet. Like, I know we have a framework in place with the SSG group. You know, hopefully that leads to a deal getting done with the PIF, but you know, there's still things that are left to be done there. If we reach a place where, you know, a deal does not get done with private equity, and so you're looking more and more reliant on whatever you get done with the PIF.
Yeah.
And they're getting world ranking points. Like, I just think guys who, as committed as they may have been to the PGA Tour, might just start looking at the exit and saying, that's, you know, maybe the only viable option left for me. So we'll see how it all goes. Here's my awkward segue to a guy who's working hard on this from a policy board perspective. But we're going to talk about his play on the course this weekend, and it's your good buddy, Jordan Spieth, because man, the roller coaster was back in effect to a certain degree. We saw, you know, some birdie streaks. We saw some hard luck, you know, drives ending up in some divots or getting plugged in bunkers. So some vintage Jordan stuff this week. But I thought the thing that was really big in terms of pay attention to, because it's been such a huge strength of his at times in the past, and seems like in past few years has kind of come and gone, is success on the greens. And this week he led the field in strokes gained putting. So just curious, you know, from what you saw with Jordan this week, and if we're looking at this year and we're saying, man, if he can keep his wrist healthy, and if he putts as well as he did this week, and that's going to become a consistent strength for him this year, I mean, could this be a big year for Jordan?
Yeah, and I think when we talked to him, we talked to him around the Memorial last year. Is that about right?
That's right, yeah.
When he came on the pod?
That's right.
And he had kind of described his year, or at least the first half of the year, being a top five type of year for him. But injuries, like you said, with the hand, you know, multiple injuries last year with that. Because when I watched him play at various times during the year, it felt like to me he was right on the cusp of winning multiple times. You know, he lost in Hilton Head. He had the offense to win at the Masters again. Just had too many bogeys, too many mistakes. But other than that, you know, it just seemed like to me the tail half of the season just inconsistent. But I think it was more due to injuries that he had. He had a back injury at the Wells Fargo. He had hand stuff that was an issue for pretty much the entire second half of the year. So seeing him play well this week without any pain, it didn't look like to me, was a good sign. I know how busy he's been too with the policy board stuff. He's been on the phone just like Adam Scott, just like Tiger Woods, Patrick Cantlay, but he's also changing diapers for a 2-year-old and a 4-month-old. Like, that's like one of the most difficult times to be a parent is when you have two under two, or however old Sammy is. And I know Sophie's kind of in that four or five month range. Just, it's a very difficult time for him just to manage all the things in his life, to be a parent, to be the, you know, the voice and the business side for the PGA Tour, and for to be representing the players. And then also, you know, he loves nothing more than to win golf tournaments. So to balance all those things, it's hard to do. And I know I'm hyping him up a lot, but it's impressive, because you don't see him out there as a guy that's really concerned about what's going on with the policy board, the PGA Tour, because he's so focused on what he's doing. So it's nice to see that he can turn off all the stuff that's going on in the game and just basically just say, you know what, y'all call me if you need me, because I'm back to playing golf. And it was good to see him hit some big shots down the stretch. He just got a bad break on 16, because I felt like that eagle putt on 18 would have been to make a playoff potentially.
Yeah, nobody understands the plight of the young father more than the podcast that you're listening to right now. This is probably an off-air conversation for you, but I found out the hard way this week. Don't give your 1-year-old son flax muffins unless you love changing the most grotesque diapers you've ever seen in your entire life. It's been a tough scene in the Hume household this week upon learning that, having that realization. But I was reading a few quotes from Jordan this week, and And I was, there were three things that stuck out to me. Well, I guess really two things. And one was just him talking about the lack of time he's had. And so the assumption I made was, first and foremost, yeah, being a young dad, having another little one at the home, you know, at home now. And you hear so many young parents talk about, like, I think one's hard, just wait till you get to two. And everything past two is kind of gravy, but like two really ups the degree of difficulty. So definitely I can see why that'd be a big ask. And then, yeah, I think we talked about this in our last pod too, of like the time ask for that policy board. I think it was Charlie Hoffman that was talking about, you know, the ways in which that demand is twofold, where it's not only all the extra meetings you have to do and all the time spent on the phone, but then it's when you're going to places where you're hoping to work on your game and improve and tune up, you're running into guys there who want to talk about, you know, who want to catch up with you, who maybe you haven't talked to on the phone already, who want a bit of insight. So, I mean, that's got to be a huge, huge ask of Jordan. And so, you know, if he has the time now to kind of work back into focusing on his game as we approach this new year, I think that'll be a big one for him. Then I think the last piece I saw was just him talking about his physical therapy efforts and how he's just been so on top of that, multiple, you know, appointments for a week, and just the confidence he seems to have in that wrist healing process. You know, it seems like, you know, all things you're saying here too, but just those to me were like, okay, this could be a good year for him, and this is a good start.
Yeah, I think so.
But speaking, you know, of, oh, go ahead.
Real
yeah.
quick, just on the century, as we're kind of like recapping our way out of this, you know, when you look at the field, and, you know, was there ever going to be a player outside of like five or six guys that you'd have been genuinely like pumped about winning? Like, you know what I mean? Like, is mm-hmm. like how many players were there this week where that would have made you really excited about the 2024 season? To me, I felt like the PGA Tour probably wanted a select few guys to win, just to show that, like, they, like Scotty winning, Max winning, Jordan winning.
Yes.
Like, to me, those are the guys that they need to win to keep the momentum train going. Like, they don't want, like, I love Chris Kirk. Like, they would 100%. Rather have somebody like Scotty win, because it's easier for them to promote it, to sell to businesses, like, just in a time where the value's gone down. And I think Chris Kirk's one of the, like, you go watch that guy play, he's unbelievable.
Oh, but yeah.
From as far as just name, face, brands on the PGA Tour, I mean, we have here this week, you know, Xander Schauffele, Colin Morikawa, guys that have won major championships. And, you know, that list used to be a pretty long list of major championship winners here at this event. You know, that's was kind of, you got all the stars together besides mainly Tiger and Rory never really played. But outside of that, you always had some of the best field. So it's a weird, it was a weird event knowing that you could have somebody kick off the year in a, with somebody that, wait, did they win last year? Where'd they finish in the FedEx Cup? And you're kind of like wondering, it's like, what is this event now? But Chris Kirk's a very worthy champion. Just wanted to say that.
Oh, honey. So. Well, I think that struck me immediately. You want Chris Kirk winning your Honda Classics, or I guess your Cognizant Classics.
That's not true, because he can win majors, man. Like, this 100%. Guy's got major champion ability, but you know what I was trying to say there.
Right? Well, and that's kind of what, you know, and again, I was going to tag this on the end, but also worth saying up front. Like, I think Chris Kirk is a phenomenal player. I mean, just watching him yesterday, he has that sort of Ernie Els-esque quality of just that just smooth, easygoing swing, yeah. And his tempo's always good. And, you know, he seems to really kind of, doesn't seem to falter under pressure. I mean, you saw that in the playoff last year with Eric.
Think about the Presidents Cup.
President's Cup, and he's got a great story. I mean, I think that's the thing, is like, he may not be a name brand, but not, you know, the story he has and the way that he's willing to own his story and not, you know, I saw other chatter online last night where people were saying, you know, golly, you know, guy goes through alcoholism and rehab, and every time he does something of note, you know, it's the first thing people ask him about it. I think you get tired of that. Well, one of the questions, to kind of wrap up the press conference last night, was on that note, and his response was along the lines of, hey man, it's part of my story. I'm great owning it, and if anything I'm doing is helping other people, that's a wonderful thing. So that's all, you know, I think it's a great storyline. I love watching him play golf, and I think he's a worthy champion. And by the way, I think, you know, this could set him up for a really big year, being in all these signature events and finding form again in this like kind of second act of his career. All that having been said, and kind of to the point you were making, you'd prefer guys like that to win these non-signature, non-marquee events and probably not the first event coming out of a year that was right. marked with, you know, how are we returning value for, you know, these sponsors and these media partners, you know, if we're not putting the best fields together. And despite all that we've just said about the quality of Chris Kirk's play and him being a worthy champion, you know, the casual is going to look at this leaderboard and be like, Chris Kirk's leading. Like, yeah, I'm not going to turn this on for the final round. Like, I'm good on that. And it's a shame. And it's, you know, so then, and that's where I think where we end up back, where we kind of talked at the beginning of the podcast of why this is a niche sport. It's like people who care about it really care about it. People who at a surface level don't really, they want to be sold marketable superstars. So it's a difficult one, because even in a restructuring of this event where it is just the champions, Chris Kirk's still there by virtue of his win last year. So it's not like you're taking a guy like that out of play. It's just, you know, I definitely think that there are marketing types or branding types that were looking at this and being like, and come on, Jordan, make a push. You know,
I think the conversation would have been a little bit more heated up if somebody that, you know, barely got snuck into the top 50 in the FedEx Cup, that's probably, we would have probably gotten into this a little sooner. With Chris Kirk mm-hmm. winning last year, it's more of the discussion of, hey, what happens in the other seven signature events if we don't have our stars win? That's going to be the big thing at the end of the year. It's like, okay, how many times did Scotty, to Jordan, JT, all the guys that are in the high end of the PIP at the end of the year, if they're not winning these events that are going to be for $20 million, you know, you're thinking to yourself, all right, well, why are these guys getting paid $20 million if the guys that are winning are not the ones driving the game? So that'll be the conversation, but you don't expect it to happen because most of the time the cream does rise to the crop. The cream does rise to the top in events where the best are gathered. So I don't expect it, just something to monitor of this new model with a little watered down product that we're used to seeing. You know, what are we going to, who are going to be the guys that win at these big events?
I think there's something interesting in there, which is, you know, that's a win for somebody. Like in a world in which nobody can be happy all the time and nobody can win all the time, and trying to make all these different groups that exist, you know, the Platinum Tour and the Bronze Tour and right. the players that are going over to the Saudis, you know, that in a world where not everybody wins, someone wins. And if, let's say, every signature event, you have a guy like a Chris Kirk or someone who's coming out of the next 10 category or the swing five category and winning this thing, yeah, it's going to stink for probably the tour and broadcasters and that group. But you know who's going to be really pumped about that? Or all these, you know, the mule class and sort of this group of players.
I hate that word. I hate the word. Can we retire?
We need a rebranding, yeah.
Can we retire that? Because, like, I just got a little, like, a little shot in the arm there. A little, like, my arm stood up on my arm here. Ugh, yeah.
Well, no, maybe it's you know, the you know, it's, if it's an A and B tour, whatever. It's just the player that isn't in all these, you know, top tier signature events that would be something to celebrate for them and give them hope. And I think in some ways it's a marginal win for a guy like Jay Monahan, who is putting together all this research last year at the Players Championship and saying, hey, our models are showing that actually only 60% of the guys stay in this thing and you can be part of the 40%. And if a bunch of guys in that 40% go out and get it this year, it's like our model's working for somebody, maybe not for the people we want it to work for, but it's working.
What they think is going to happen is that these guys are going to beat up on each other. And they think that's where the points are going to get distributed out, to where, you know, they're all different guys are going to be catching points each week. It's not going to be, you know, all of these top 25 the same every week. They think it's going to be very jumbled up. They think it's going to be a little bit spread out. And that's where they end up getting that 60% number of the 50 guys that are in there right now to be in the top 50 at the end of the year. But I think about the Sony this week, and I go and look at PGA Tour links and look at the field list for the week, and I see that half the guys from the Korn Ferry Tour are not in the field for the week. And if you've read anything on Twitter this week, you saw that they had a mandatory rookie orientation at the Sony, in which all the guys aren't in. So it's and most likely, if you, it would be very few amount of players that wouldn't come over here to do the Monday. But the problem is you got to come over here on the weekend, on a Saturday, Sunday now to do the orientation before the Monday. So the guys that are in the field have to get here super early to do the orientation. And hopefully hopefully these players are billing the tour on the travel on this that aren't in, because you could have done this at the Amex or something like that, to where, you know, they didn't have to travel all the way across a different pond, but across the pond over here to Hawaii.
Yeah.
It's
interesting.
Like the fact that these, and I guess to get to my point, is like the fact that those players aren't in, to me, like where are we getting lost in this? Because there's not a, to me, the guys that came off this Korn Ferry tour should have an avenue to get into these open events. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where you need to cut down on the top 125. It needs to, if it's 25 players that you need to cut down to get it to a top 100, to where you can have a better flow in and a better flow out, to where you have expectations of being able to play every single open event if you're a dude coming off the Korn Ferry. It'll make it much more competitive for the PGA Tour mm-hmm. standpoint, for the guys that are trying to keep their card. And that's where I don't know if it'll ever happen, but if we move to that elite type series with the LIV Golf Tour, and where it's mixed in, and then have your B Tour, whatever you call it, that probably should be playing for more, like, I mean, they're playing for $9 million in these things now.
Mm-hmm.
Those things should probably be more in the 4 to 7 range, right? Like if mm-hmm. if you're being honest about the value you're getting with the field, you know, it's probably more in that range. And and then continue to pay the top players the money of which we've been seeing these signature events, $20 million, and that be kind of how you do it. And it's a bigger B tour, so a lot more players, full fields in those, and then a tighter top tour. And that might, is it 100 dudes? Is it more like 70? Like, I don't know, but I probably would lean more towards the 70, 75 players on an elite tour versus 125. That's just too many cards. And that's where we talked about it last week, mm-hmm. but you really see it this week at the Sony. And I truly believe that the guys that are coming up should have an avenue to, whether it be the B Tour, or whether it be an avenue to play in like the Swing Five, which I think is a cool concept. I think the Swing Five is a great way to reward players that are playing well to get into the big event, similar to how we were talking about with the LIV Golf Tour and what do you call them? The
LIV Promotions event, or the month. Well, I guess our Monday qualifier. Oh, Scrubs GC.
and you can't do, you can't call them Scrubs right. on the PGA Tour, but because right. they're not going to have a team name. But is that kind of that whole bubble? Does it kind of make sense to you when I'm spitting out?
100%, because I think that there has to be, like, I guess the way what you're outlining strikes me is you're creating a pretty compelling B Tour. Like, that B Tour is going to be really interesting to watch. It's going to have some big names in it. It's going to have guys that have won a lot in the past. And I guess my head goes to a place where it's like it goes to like a international, like English soccer football model, where you can have really good teams historically that at the end of the year have an off year and they're fighting for promotion relegation at the you know, bottom of the table. And some of those teams get relegated. And by the way, they go down to a league in the championship underneath the Premier League. That's a really good, fun, compelling league to watch. And a lot of those championships teams still play in cups, which would be equivalent to like a major or another tournament that a player could get in through a different way, even if he's playing on the B Tour, where you're still going to see him playing in big things. It's just that on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis, they play on a B Tour. And so I don't think it's the end of the world. I think it reinforces the thing that you're hearing a lot of these guys say on a week-to-week basis about, you know, Rory said this in the Stick to Football podcast of like, golf should be a meritocracy, you know, and if it is kind of tough luck where some guys past 70 have to play the B Tour for a year or some extended period of time,
right,
but get their way back in. Like, I think that's, and by the way, I'd probably watch both tours because it'd be interesting in both places. So
100%. It's whatever you want to call it. It would be if the PGA Tour Elite Series Tour was called, let's just call it the PGA Tour. Let's call that the PGA Tour. And then the one right below it, which would be a bigger field tour, the Korn Ferry Plus Tour, whatever you want. Like it's a very in between the PGA Elite and Korn Ferry. So that's, you're sandwiching basically what we used to call the Korn Ferry Tour playoffs. Mm-hmm. And that is basically the types of players you're going to be get in a week to week basis on that tour, which is what I would hope would happen, because then you can play your way into the top 70 for the following year. So the guys that, I don't know how many you relegate. So let's say you have 70 dudes on that Elite Series Tour. Let's say you keep 45. Now you got 25 cards that you can play for on that Korn Ferry Tour Plus. And you got 25 cards that you insert, bang, you're in. And you're in those events. And then you have the same, you can have a level even below, which would be your basic Korn Ferry Tour that plays you into now, kind of like there's just an extra step you got to get to play for the amount of money that these guys are playing for.
I think that's where you get to a more financially responsible place, where you have less top tier mouths to feed. So you can feed the top tier mouths more, keep them happy, keep them where they are, while also saying,
you don't have
to
do the PIP then, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You become more efficient. You streamline things. And so, it sounds, backwards, because you're like, I'm creating three more additional classes and I'm trying, but like, I think if you get it right, and that's kind of what you're workshopping this year, then you don't need to do all the other window dressing going forward.
And let's just think about some of the events we're talking about. Like let's just use the John Deere as an example, an event that's never really had stars shown up, but is it one of the better events on the PGA Tour that gets great support? Yes, it's a great event. And what John Deere, they don't want to pay $20 million for an event having no clue who's going to show up unless you're guaranteed it to be a signature event. And even now, let's say it used to be that event used to be, when I was on tour, it was one of the lower paying PGA Tour events. And I don't know what it was, whether it was 4 or 5 million when I was playing, but let's say now it's 8 and they don't even know who's showing up. They might not even have a star show up this year. They might have a couple they can use for marketing, but, and that's maybe all they really need, but did they really need to pay double what they were paying 6 or 7 years ago for the exact same field that, you have a couple top 50 players showing up? It's always one of the worst sandwiched events. It's like right before the Open Championships and nobody's going to the middle of America and then flying over to the other side of the pond. It just never really made sense for guys that were in the top 50. So that to me is like how the PGA Tour has done well this long without guaranteeing what type of field you're going to have is pretty incredible, because, the Honda, John Deere, like you kind of go on 3M, like you think they are excited about not knowing what type of field they're going to get. And you have to back channel to try to, whether it's do a dinner for a player where they come in and host for one night on a Wednesday night to get, you pay a top player to come in to play. That were the things that were having to happen to get these fields to match what they were having to pay from a standpoint of like, we didn't want to be left to our, all of our people that we were bringing in for the week. And we only had one top 50 player playing and we spent all this money and now double what we used to pay. So that to me is the issue where they're going to run into sponsors, and the way you solve it, make them pay right around that 3 to 6 million mark, which is much more affordable, especially now in this economy, and you're going to get a field that you probably were always going to get, maybe minus one or two top players, but still you have players that have won on the PGA Tour that are going to be there. I just think that makes a lot of sense. Full fields there. You got your Korn Ferry below that. This would be your Korn Ferry Tour Plus or your PGA Tour regular, and then you have your Elite PGA Tour Series.
Well, and as you're talking about the branding of the different tours of like, is this PGA Tour Elite and this regular PGA Tour? The thing that seems to make more and more sense in my head is retaining the PGA Tour branding for what becomes the B Tour, and making a big presenting sponsor ask for this elite elevated tour. You know, whether that's a Saudi company or someone that's part of the SSG fold or whatever, and it becomes, you know, this thing where if you want to have one of these, you know, whatever the next iteration of signature event or elevated event is, you got to pony up the big bucks, because there's only going to be
100%
15 of them a year, let's say, or whatever, 20, probably closer to 15, where it's like, if you have this event, we're guaranteeing the best players in the world, including live players, at all these events. And so the TV contract, the spend has to be bigger for the media companies. The spend has to be bigger for the sponsors. Yep. The purses have to be bigger. And it's truly, truly elite golf. And at that point, I think it's like, okay, I know what I'm signing up for. And that's how we recoup all the money of, you know, to make the whole thing stay afloat, is these are big ticket deals. And then, and part of that, I think, is
getting live players. You like it if you have 10 live players that cycle in. Let's say the live tour does still exist. You have like a funneling, like, hey, your top 10 points list, maybe a couple sponsors exemptions are in these elite tour series events. And that's how you satisfy the golf market as far as the fan that wants to see the best players playing week in, week out, if the live tour is going to still exist.
Right. And then I think, you know, if you do that, then it's a lot easier than to, I think you end up retaining a lot more sponsors, to your point, you know, in that structure where it's like, hey, you know, like, I don't know the nature of Wells Fargo's circumstances or what Honda's were before they left, but it's like, we know you're, you know, Wells Fargo was sort of an elevated event, so they were getting good fields, but Honda, it's like, we know that you're not getting what you maybe expected or wanted in terms of field strength. So we're going to make a smaller ask of you. You're still going to get a lot of really good players. And by the way, you're going to get a lot of rising stars, and it could be the next tour. And so I just think it becomes palatable in a lot of different ways. So I think, to me, it makes a ton of sense. I'd be shocked if that's not already being discussed, you know?
That's why, like, 2025, they need to blow up this system to be looking more this way. And the networks, like you mentioned it, like the media rights deal is not representative of what we're getting right now. It's a watered down product, and different, and especially the open events. It's just not the same fields that we're accustomed to seeing. And listen, we love calling the events where we see somebody change, like their lives change. And that's what the most fun part about golf and TV is, that you don't have to have a star win an event. You can have somebody that wins the Honda Classic or whatever event it is, that their lives change. And to me, the problem is that it's just the way it's set up right now. It's just difficult for the networks to invest, or the golf fan to invest, or the sponsors to invest in a field that they just don't know what they're going to get. And I think it's very difficult to sell when you look at the field list at some of the watered down events, and you're just thinking like, man, is this the best we have for golf right now? And they've got to find a way to get the best players playing together, and then also create a competitive B product, a relegation type of promotion product, to where you can get players funneling in and out. And then you have, like this week, though, the Sony field was where I was like, man, they have got to figure this out. You can't have guys that their lives change and they get their card. And I'm not sitting here complaining for those players, because they have an incredible opportunity in front of them. But shouldn't they have a place to play once they get their PGA Tour card or their card, whatever it is?
Well, and if it's a more realistic set of expectations coming in, it's probably more palatable. If it's like, hey, you graduated to the regular PGA Tour, like, you don't just get to jump right to this elite tour yet. So it's not like, oh, I got my tour card, here I go. And it's like, you got to fly to Honolulu for a meeting, for a tournament that you're not in, but you could try to Monday qualify. And it's like, I can totally see how that would be a tough reality for those guys that are on tour.
One quick thing, Charlie, can you chime in on this real quick? Do you think you'd have to separate the FedEx Cup points from like one to the other? Cause right now, the big issue, as you call it, with the lifeblood of the PGA Tour, the players that are not at the top, is how, and we discussed this, the distribution of the new FedEx Cup point structure is heavily favored towards the guys that are in the signature events that really make it difficult for the players that are in the open field events to have a chance to get in the signature events. Do you think in this new format that it would have to, like, you would have FedEx Cup points for the Elite, FedEx Cup, like, there would no, there wouldn't all be in the same pond again?
100%. That was where I was going to go with this, and I think you're dead on. It's just too hard, because then it's, you know, in some ways it's like the college football playoff, where it's like, well, you know, Florida State went undefeated, but a bunch of people sitting in a room who don't play football think that because, you know, their quarterback was injured, they're not going to win a game. And they might very well. A bunch of guys opted out, but they got steamrolled by Georgia. So that may very well have been the case. But people are deciding that isn't the actual thing that we're here to watch and see played. And I think in some senses, that's kind of what's happened with the FedEx Cup, where it's like, this is now worth 700 points and that one's still worth 500 points. And it's just all feels arbitrary to a certain extent where it's like, how are you assigning value to this win in sort of a lab instead of like what was actually done? So that's all by way of saying is like, I really love about, you know, I think the next 10 swing five thing is really cool and I want to see it play out this year. And so if it's more of a, there is a self-contained point structure for that level of the tour. And then if you finish in a certain place, you could have whatever points you want. It could be a 50,000 points per win. We don't care. Like, just however you determine the top 5 or 10 on that tour is, then those players go get to play in the Elite, you know, event on a rolling basis. That seems to make a lot more sense to me, rather than saying we're going to try to kind of mix all these different points in and make them all work in the system and figure it out. You know,
I like our plan better. Maybe Jay and company will hear our thoughts and maybe they already listened to the show, you know.
If so, Jay, thanks for listening. Please join
Jay,
us. When, at your
Jay,
convenience.
make sure you like and subscribe and make sure you send it to 5 friends.
Sure, Jay will get right on that. To briefly, we have a few more things to hit on here, but I'm glad we went in depth on this, but just a few more from the century.
Kind of fired me up. I just got fired up.
I love it.
I feel like we're on to something. I feel like we finally figured it out, because how, like, where are you going to start the live guys? You know, that, like, how are you going to get the live guys back over here? And to me, it seems obvious now. Like, you have a.
Sorry, I react because you reminded me of something that I see. We're fired up this week. But you reminded me of something that I thought that I also think is a key important part of this. And talking about the live guys and just the different forms of competition, too, which is to say that if you make the Elite competition smaller, you know, kind of what where live started, like, you only have to play X amount of times per year. So let's say it's 15 events total or even less. What you leave more room for is non-traditional golf or even non-green grass golf. So things like team competitions, to the extent the guys want to play in those.
Yeah.
Things like TGL, because, and again, this is not like the pile on Chris Kirk hour, but, like, you know who sells more Callaway golf gloves than Chris Kirk? The good guys. I mean, they literally, I mean, like, there's not a Chris Kirk branded golf club. So I say all that by way of saying, it's like, if you get people, you know, really excited, if you get someone who doesn't necessarily watch professional golf, but has come to the game of late and they're coming to this thing and they're, like, trying to make sense of this system and the way it's changing. And it's like, it's not very approachable as a new fan trying to understand it and figure out how you're going to root for it and follow it. But if you make it very simple for people, you care about these four majors, and then here are these additional 8 to 10 events past those four majors that are our biggest marquee events that you have to follow every single year. And then past that, we're going to, you know, give you a bunch of different types of programming, some of it produced by us, some of it produced by people who are adjacent to the tour. That, to me, feels like a better serving to grow the game, as we keep talking about, than we're just going to give you a million tour events and you can't figure out which ones are important or not and who's good and who isn't. So that's a little bit of a diversion from, I think, where you're going with live. But I just think that's an important thing to say of, like, let's really think about creative ways to grow the game.
And let's say there's 80 players that get to play in the Elite Tour Series, 70 off the PGA Tour Cup that they have every year. And let's say the LIV Tour players, I would care more about the LIV Golf Tour if the top 10 of that tour in their points list got into the Elite Series. Like, I would generally follow it more. I would care who 100%. Got in. I would be frustrated on players that obviously had breakout years that probably didn't deserve to be on the tour in the first place. Like, maybe you have an issue with that, but you definitely want to guarantee some sponsors invites from LIV and that, like making sure that John Rahm, Cameron Smith, Bryson DeChambeau, like those types of players are going to be at those events to, you can, and now it, like, you could take that piece to networks and be like, hey, like we got the guys, like we're going to have a team concept integrated throughout the year with it. Easier to follow, maybe a little difficult to cover with the team stuff. I haven't really been able to figure out how difficult it's been for the CW network to cover the team and the individual stuff, like how complicated that could be. But yeah, and we talked about this too last week. What happens to the players that sign with LIV that are already off? You know, where do they go? Right now they go to the Asian Tour. Do you want them now to start at the Corn Ferry Tour level, or do you want some of the guys that had a certain status to start at the B level tour that we kind of just discussed, where they can work their way into it from there? I don't know what's fair, but I wouldn't have an issue with a player that won multiple times to start in the middle tour. But if they started at the top, maybe you'd have some dudes that have a big problem. Maybe, I don't know who would be the players that would be guaranteed into that elite tour series, but I guarantee you it's a pretty dang small list.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. I mean, I think some of it is, to your point, sponsor exemptions to make sure we get the guys in who we need to get in. I mean, if you look at I don't know how you do the
Phil. The, you're not sending Phil to the middle ground tour, right?
Right, like, exactly.
He's a name. He's eyeballs, and you need eyeballs.
You give him some sort of career accomplishment sort of deal there. But I think it's like, if you look at, okay, so if 50 of the 125 on the PGA Tour get into these signature events, and that's 40%, like, I don't know that you can let 20 LIV guys into these signature things, but maybe it's like, kind of to your point, 10 or a quarter of it, 12, you know, and then plus like two or three sponsor invites. And then you're kind of getting closer to that, something that looks equivalent to the tour process. So it's like, hey, this is fair. Like this is roughly equivalent. And then it works itself out over time as people start playing these things and you're accruing points, or either staying or you're getting bumped out for the next wave of guys to come through. And I think, you know, I think the point initially is that it's going to be really hard to figure it out of the gate because of all the, you know, how do you mesh everything properly? But, you know, play solves everything over time, right? It's like the best player is going to rise
to the top. Except if you're Taylor Gooch. Does not solve everything. You could win the LIV Golf Tour points merit, and it doesn't solve everything. All it solves is your bank account right now.
That is fair. It might solve something under our new system, but is, I'm glad.
That's
we,
a way.
I'm glad.
That's a way how you know now, like, the way Taylor played. Like you would be totally fine with him getting into the Elite Tour 100%. Series because of his play. Like, he earned playing very well against quality competition. Now he's in the Elite Tour Series, and we'll see how good he actually is. And we already know he's very good. But let's see how he does against everybody else.
While we're on this, like, I'm just going to look at last year's points list and just quickly run through it. It's like Taylor Gooch in, Cam Smith in, Brooks Koepka in, Bryson in, Dustin Johnson in. There's five there. Patrick Reed in, Harold Varner in, Mito Pereira in. Like, Brandon Grace is like where I'm starting kind of like that. He's ninth in the list. I'm like,
Harold Varner was, he finished seventh last year.
He did.
I didn't realize he played that well.
In the player point standing. So like Brandon Grace, then Charles Howell III, then Sebastian Munoz.
Why don't we just cut it off at eight guys and then we just pick four spots then?
Well, and that, because then you pass that, you have guys like Anirban Lahiri, Carlos Ortiz, Sergio Garcia, you know, it's like, you know, Joaquin Niemann was 21st. It's like, you know, you get a little further down, you're like, you maybe need some exemptions there. But like, I think that 10 feels about right. 10 feels about right. And then, you know, you kind of go from there. But also, like, you're adding John Rahm this year, and if he gets another marquee name and you're starting to bump down, and then all of a sudden that top 10 looks pretty quality. All guys. And I'm like, yes, no problem with seeing any of those guys on the Elite Tour.
We have solved professional
workshop we've done here. You got to discuss it when you feel inspired by it. And today was that day. So, well, worth the deep dive there on our continued restructuring of the tour, which Jay Monahan will, of course, be on top of as soon as he gives us five stars and subscribes and shares with a friend. A couple ones I just want to touch on quickly from Century. The Scotty Scheffler flat stick discussion has revived itself for 2024 once again. You know, looking at his strokes gained stats at the Century, was third in the field off the tee, second in the field in approach, and 45th in putting, where he lost almost 2 3/4 strokes to the field. Look, I don't know if there's much more to say about this other than our same line we used last year, where it's like, it's the same old deal. But, you know, it was kind of interesting to see him go to a new putter, go to a new super stroke grip, work with Phil Kenyon this offseason, have three really solid putting rounds at the Hero, have a bad one to finish the tournament, but still win the tournament, so it didn't really matter, and wonder how it was going to look this year. And this is our first time out. So a T5, you know, Scotty is doing Scotty things as always, but just wanted to put a little pin in and see how that goes going forward.
Well, just real quick on that, like, yeah, the first 2 days he was in the top half of the field in putting. It was just third and fourth round, he just didn't putt well. And I'm still buying stock in his putter. That's all I'm going to say.
I love it. Another one that I'd like to get to, because I'd like for everyone to congratulate me on, in our segment last week talking about rising stars to keep an eye on, I mentioned Sahith Theegala, and here we look at this week one coming out of gates hot. So everyone, you're welcome. I'll take my plaudits, I'll take my roses here now. You walked with him were you with Sunday, or was it another day as well?
I think it was within the Saturday and Sunday, at different periods of time. Just kind of bounce around a little bit. But yeah,
what do we think?
He's a very creative player, and he hit some unreal shots from areas that I was just like, oh man, like he was in a divot short of the green right on 15. And I thought it was going to be like a chop down low shot. And he's like, yeah, I'm just going to play it up in the air. And he just hits this like flop shot from a divot. I'm just like, what the, like, who does that? And he hit it to like 4 feet. So he's a player that played well at Augusta last year. And maybe he's a guy that, like, when I'm thinking about the Masters this year, he's just like a dark horse guy that I think could be a real threat to winning that tournament, even though he's only played it once. He's just got a ton of creativity to his game. He's got a lot of talent, hits it plenty far enough, good putter. So yeah, I really like him as a person, and he's definitely a very good player. And congratulations to you, but it didn't matter because Minwoo didn't even play, so we can't compare head-to-heads on our dudes now.
This was not a head-to-head, because, I mean, listen, I also mentioned our other friend of the pod, Ludwig Aubert, who big bounce back from Ludwig on Sunday. We won't even talk about,
like,
Saturday.
He shot like 4 over and then 10 under or something like that on Saturday, Sunday?
Yes, that's correct. He shot 77 on Saturday, and then he shot 63 on Sunday, I believe. So that
nice
all that matters
it's
is kind of
nice to
later.
Know that I could have beaten Ludwig on Saturday. You know, if I'd have teed off one on one and with him, and this is without SK even practicing, I think I get it done, Charlie. I do.
Listen, it was a bit of a tough week for Versa One Gang. I'll say, Versa One's loving the Bermuda greens down here in Palm Beach, Florida. It's looking really, the eye test, passing the eye test right
love
now.
It, love it.
Well, a quick one here, because this is a little tease for you. You might see this guy pop up on our podcast in the near future. But as we're talking about, you know, you getting out there playing well along with Kevin Kisner, just any brief thoughts you want to offer about working with Kis this week on the broadcast? Maybe we'll unpack those in an upcoming episode of the pod.
Listen, I've always loved Kis, and it was really fun to work with him. You know, I think, you know, it takes a while to really understand all the ins and outs of TV. And he sat in the truck on Thursday, and our truck is just chaotic. There's just a lot going on. Like, you wouldn't believe all the things that have to happen to see what you see on the TV, and just the organization it takes to knowing where you're going, this and that. Like, it's very, very complicated and stressful. And Kis was in there for an hour and just was like, oh my God, like, I can't do this. And there's just 100 people talking, yelling. And so he finally gets into our booth and he's like, oh, so I only just hear you guys. Okay, I can do this. but I thought his storytelling was great. I thought he knew, you know, he obviously has great relationships with the players. I loved going back and forth with him on stuff as well. You know, he's self-deprecating, which I like, is, you know, I think that that humanizes any player that's made $30 million. You know, he at times, you know, talks about his career and the things that he's done, but also can laugh about his distances and other things too, just about his relationships with players. So thought he did a great job, and looking forward to working with him in Phoenix.
My wife said to me at one point, she was like, I think Smiley's in the booth this week, but he looks like a little bit different. And I said, listen, Amanda, as someone who graduated from a Southern university and parts my hair to the side, your stereotyping of us is very, very hurtful. And I do not stand for it.
Stereotyping or the Southern swoop?
I mean, can you believe it? I did get a great kick out of that. I'm like, no, it's, you know, kids is... They're cut from similar cloths, you know, but it's,
we definitely look alike from like a 30-foot view for sure. Yeah, yeah. Definitely. Like, but if you saw us in person, you know, I'm 6'1", 6'2", he's a little shorter, but also just like just profile of the face and hair. Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely a little similar. It's my doppelganger. Is that the correct word?
I think he's
that...
doppelganger. I think the kids on the internet would say something like, you know, mom, can we have Smiley Kaufman? And it's, she says, no, we have Smiley Kaufman at home, and it's, and it's Kevin Kisner. And,
Francie thinks I kind of look like Carlos Ortiz sometimes too. So it's kind of funny. I got different golfers on tour that kind of I resemble.
Carlos Ortiz, another side parter. There are, you know, dozens of us out there. Yeah. So that's a wrap of sorts on Century. I can't believe it's taken us this long to get to maybe the biggest piece of news, at least in the greater golf culture interest. But it's official, been rumored for weeks now. Tiger gave some very short answers about this at the PNC Championship. But Tiger has parted ways with Nike after, I mean, golly, outside of probably Michael Jordan, I'd say more so than LeBron James, I don't think any athlete has been more associated with the Nike brand than Tiger Woods. So statement he posted earlier today was, over 27 years ago, I was fortunate to start a partnership with one of the most iconic brands in the world. The days since have been filled with so many amazing moments and memories. If I started naming them, I could go on forever. Phil Knight's passion and vision brought this Nike and Nike Golf partnership together, and I want to personally thank him along with the Nike employees and incredible athletes I've had the pleasure of working with along the way. People will ask if there is another chapter. Yes, there will certainly be another chapter. See you in LA. So with that said, Smiley, you know, what are your predictions as to what we see Tiger in at the Genesis? Your team, Polo Ralph Lauren, RLX here. You want to make a quick pitch for RLX?
Well, if they sign Tiger, I think I'll probably be moving on to another company because they're going to go all in. I think any company that goes in for Tiger is probably going to be cutting the whole roster.
Yeah.
But
fair.
You know, I don't know, because I think what I'm most interested to see is his TW brand. Does Nike own that? Or does Tiger Woods own that? And that to me, does it change what we're going to see? No, but it's kind of what you saw with Phil Mickelson in his last, you know, 8 years or so, went to his famous jump at Augusta National. So I kind of think that's what we're going to see is if Tiger Woods owns that brand, which I assume he probably does. I didn't know if Nike had any. I can't imagine that Nike owns the brand logo of Tiger Woods, but and let's say they don't, I assume that's what we're going to see for Tiger in the future is his brand logo on a shirt. I don't know what the shirt's going to be. I assume he's probably going to do a deal with somebody, but dude, there's not money in clothes. There really isn't, unless you're just going to go, you just give Tiger half the company, because that's the only way you can pay Tiger Woods, unless you're, outside of Nike, who else is going to be paying him that, unless it's an overseas brand that just has all this money?
Well, I mean, so obviously, and I think we even discussed this on the show, is that the rumors are surrounding TaylorMade, because he's, of course, you know, he has a club deal with TaylorMade, and there have been postings of late.
Do they have clothes?
Like, that's the sort of the rumors that they are launching a clothing line, or whatever you want to call it. Yeah. Like, and this has been, there's been like job postings of like, you know, we're looking for a, you know, I don't know what the specific, you know, title of the posting is, but just someone to run an online e-commerce wing of TaylorMade that's apparel related. So, you know, that's one sort of guess as to where he could end up. But again, I mean, require a lot of money.
I thought like TaylorMade and Adidas had like a partnership. No,
I think they did at one point. Remember, there are a lot of guys. I feel like Sergio was a maybe a long time ago, or maybe it's Dustin Johnson way back in the day. That was TaylorMade and Adidas
Berger
guy.
Was Adidas. Xander Schauffele, Adidas, Callaway. He was Callaway. So that because Ludwig's now Titleist. So, yeah,
I think what happened there was I think Adidas owned some sort of controlling stake in TaylorMade and then decided to spin it off when it wasn't as profitable as maybe they wanted it to be. And I think that's probably where Nike's sitting right now is like, you know, for all the popularity in golf, maybe like they just make so much more money doing other things that Nike does that it doesn't really make sense for them. So the TaylorMade clothing one's an interesting one to me, especially when you look at their roster of guys. Because, okay, so Jason Day just left for Malbon, which, by the way, that's a whole other topic we didn't get to. The pants he's wearing this week, I mean, good Lord. Like, I thought we were, like, fashion is great, but we're going backwards there. Not sure what's happening.
The pants I saw him wear, if we talk about Lucas Glover's pants in Memphis, those pants are not surviving in Memphis. I'm telling you, they're not making it.
Well, it's like, I just want to go up, as weird as it sounds, and just grab his pants. And just see what material they're made out of.
Stop. Bonk, Charlie. Bonk.
Because, but here's what I mean by that. Is if they're like performance material, okay. Talk to me. Like, I'll have a conversation.
From what I
with
could
you.
See, no.
They look like,
I mean,
painter's pants or something. Or like,
they look pretty thick, man. It's when you go paintballing, you know, like you wear those pants, yes, and it like doesn't hurt. Like, that's what it looked like from my view. But fashionable, like different, yes. Worthy to wear in Memphis? I don't think so.
So Jason Day, of course, leaves that roster, and I forget what his club. I guess he does play TaylorMade irons, and so maybe a TaylorMade staff guy. But you know, Bridgestone ball, maybe not all in on TaylorMade. But if you look at the rest of the Nike guys, or at least the notable ones, Rory McIlroy, TaylorMade guy, Scottie Scheffler, TaylorMade guy, Tommy Fleetwood, TaylorMade guy. Like in this last year, Nelly Korda, who did a Nike deal and then a TaylorMade deal. And so it feels like if Nike is indeed trying to get out of the golf apparel space, that it would make a ton of sense for TaylorMade to just fill that void as sort of an active wear type of, you know, golf clothing maker.
Just they'd probably just get paid a little bit more on these club deals, just like, hey, we're going to pay you this much more to wear the clothes as well.
I just, my only request is I want the old TaylorMade logo. I want to bring that back for the apparel, and I want burner, whatever you call
rocket
that,
balls.
That rust. We get rocket balls green. We get like burner rust, whatever that bronze color is. I want that in the color of Pellet for all the clothing. Those are my advice. I also like, I was having a bit of fun with this on my own today. Like, couple of pitches for Tiger. Like, how hilarious would it be if we saw him show up at the Genesis with like a G4 hat that said like TGR in comically large script and like a blood red glove? That was my one. Or like, what if he was like, you know, he's big Call of Duty guy. What about like a PXG Black Ops full black outfit with like a Call of Duty shirt sponsor on
that's
the
his
chest?
Vibe, I feel like that's kind of his thing.
I'm just saying,
or you know, or like kind of how when he shows up to the golf course in cutoffs, you know, like I think a cutoff yes. would be a great way to just be like, "Yo, I'm yoked. Like, what are you gonna yes. do about it?" You know, can you like imagine him setting up in Memphis yes. in the summer with his triceps literally on the tee marker, like his arms are that big, just like. Whoa.
I don't know if there are any rules against that, but like if you're wearing a skin tight, you know, long sleeve thing or even short sleeve thing, and then you wear just cut off sleeves.
Again, Charlie, bonk.
I'm gonna bonk myself out of this segment.
Let's move out of the clothing.
bonking our way out of the clothing segment.
We got Charlie saying, I just want to feel Jason Day's pants. And now we got Charlie saying, skin tight Tiger Woods shirt.
I'm making some provocative pitches. I'm here. I'm trying to grow the game. I'm just trying to grow the game, guys. Just let me grow the game in peace. All right, we're bonking that segment away. Not much more here other than a nice, positive, uplifting one to go out with, which is Gary Woodland making his return from brain surgery this week at Sony Open. This is awesome. I love this.
Yeah, I'm excited. Sony Open's a fun week. It's an easy golf course to walk, so I'm excited about that. I'm sure we're going to see some of the highlights of Jordan and I in a kayak at some point. Our producer for the week's already said he's going to do something with that. Kids will be playing. I'm hoping that he'll be in a feature group so I can watch kids play, because that'd be fun just to play to the TV side of it. Hopefully we do like a walk and talk or something, but we're going to hopefully have him on the podcast this week as well. So look forward to interview with kids and about his week and what's ahead for him. So got that to look forward to in your feed this week.
That's perfect. That's a great way to take us out. That should be the next thing that you are looking for. A fun little conversation between Smiley and Kiz, just recapping his first week in the booth. Looking forward to that. And then, of course, on the other side of that, some Sony Open recap as we start getting into the 2024 PGA Tour season. So we appreciate you watching and listening, and we will talk to you back here soon.
The Smiley Show is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcast.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.